Welcome to Veterinary Advice Animal News and Views, the place for pets and the people who love them.
Here, kitty, kitty, kitty.
Here are your hosts, practicing veterinarians Dr. Roger Welton and Dr. Karen Lewis.
Hi, pet lovers. Welcome to another episode of Veterinary Advice Animal News and Views. I'm Dr. Karen Lewis. With me is my co-host, Dr. Roger Welton. You probably forgot we existed because it's been so long. Again, I've been saying that a lot lately. So how's it going, Roger?
It's going well. I know you're in the process of getting new real estate to practice in, and I'm in the process of, as if I don't have enough to do, acquiring a second practice. So that's what's been taking most of my free time, I imagine.
Oh, you mentioned that. Wow.
Yeah, it's crazy. I can't divulge which one it is because, it's hardly a done deal yet. But, I'm doing exactly what I said I would absolutely never do. So how's your real estate project going?
Well, I'm hoping that hopefully sometime in December, this building will finally become mine. It's only been under contract since Labor Day.
Oh, that's so. It.
God, I'm just like, it's all the city requirements and
Well, with the practice I'm looking at, I'm not just looking to purchase the practice, but also that's real estate. So I'm right there with you. We haven't agreed to terms yet, but I'll be in the same purgatory as you shortly if we do agree to terms. So anyway,
the person's retiring and wants to sell it. Is that what they're doing, or?
It's someone who. The owner, I'm not going to say he or she, but the owner doesn't want her legacy. Well, look at that. I did it. She doesn't want her legacy to be handed over to nameless, faceless corporate. So she really wants it to go to someone who's going to nurture the legacy and give her clients and her employees what she feels they deserve. So I find that very admirable and honorable, because you see a lot of veterinarians on the verge of retirement just looking to, cash out with the big dollars from corporate.
But then the corporations make it so easy, too. They're like, we'll just offer you this flat fee, you're like, well, why wouldn't I?
And for a lot more money. But the thing is, if you have a practice manager that you care about, employees you care about, they don't care about them. They'll come in and clean house and just change the whole culture of the practice. And that doesn't sit well with some people. So it's more than dollar signs. And a person like that, you kind of like the culture she probably has nurtured, that she's got a soul.
Yeah.
If I may, and that was the person, another female. That's what she was like, the lady who owned my current practice before me. And it was really nice to take over a practice like that where the clients just felt good that they were being treated well and honestly.
How would that work though? Because would you have to hire another vet or would you go work there? Because obviously there's no doctor there because she's gone. How does that work?
Well, so I got, we're up to three doctors in my current practice, so we'd probably have a couple of days where we're, kind of platooning where, I would take one day, another associate would take another day, another associate would take another day. And then we'd be looking at probably hiring a young but somewhat experienced associate to take the rest of the hours. So, So we'll see. I'll keep you posted, Yeah, it's exciting and terrifying at the same time.
Well, I know, because I was actually thinking, I was like, see, Roger's lucky because he buys practices that exist. At least, all this stuff that exists that you just take for granted that I had no idea until I'm like building this from nothing. And I'm like, oh my God, all like the safety stuff and the every little things that you don't even realize because you never just walk by them in practice and never use them or care. And now you're like, oh, wait, I have to have how many fire extinguishers? What? It's just like,
And you're going to love the random inspections. And by law, they can just show up whenever they want in the middle of surgery.
Oh, God.
And I'll say, come at least after I'm done with surgery. No, we don't have to do that. We're going to inspect right now and you're going to make it happen. Oh, great. We don't care about the life of this patient. Yeah. Lovely. So, anywho, nice to talk to you again. In pre-show, we were chatting about, this, we both blogged recently about the same topic, which I always find interesting. When we diagnose a patient with cancer, we mentioned that the C word, chemotherapy, and you automatically get owner cringing. Would you agree with that?
Oh, yeah, looks of horror. And they're like, oh, I would never do that to my animal. And I'm like, I haven't even gotten the therapy out. All I've said is chemo. And
right.
That's all I did. So.
Yeah. Absolutely. And you know, the thing is, and I want everybody to realize this and really put the word out there that the vast majority of us veterinarians are not interested in doing anything to your pet that's going to perhaps save its life, but give it horrible quality in exchange for that. Would you agree with that, Dr. Karen?
Right. And I have two groups of clients in my practice. I do have some that are like, keep this pet alive no matter what. And like, stuff it, put it on a respirator, do whatever, you know what I mean? And I'm like, okay, we need to think rationally. But then, unfortunately, most of my patients and my clients are like, well, yeah, you know, if it's not a good quality, what's the point? And we can kind of, you know, discuss that more. And those are the ones that are like more resistant about chemo because they don't want to affect their quality of life. Or the ones that are like, keep this pet alive at all costs. Are like, yeah, let's just do it and, you know, forget what happens. But, and they always end up happy actually because the animals usually do well. But anyway, I'm going down a different rabbit hole now. But no, because, and the people that are the most resistant are the ones who have had chemo or have had a loved one go through chemo. A human.
Yeah, certainly.
And they're the ones that are like, and then you hear the stories of, oh my gosh, no, I saw my mom go through breast cancer treatment and she was vomiting for a week or she, you know, I mean, and it's just like, and if it was like that, I wouldn't do that to any of my animals either. I mean, but I also don't think we'd be suggesting it was that bad. I mean,
yeah.
With the strings, you know.
And I'll be honest with you, when I was at University of Illinois and, you know, I was approaching my oncology rotation, I thought, God, I don't want to do this. You know, like this is going to be so morbid and terrible. And it actually turned out to be really, really amazing. The good you can do to these animals, because the goals are different, right? In human medicine, the goal ultimately is eradication of the cancer, and they'll bring you pretty close to the brink of death to accomplish that.
Yeah.
Versus with the animals, it's, let's find that balance between a reasonable remission and good tolerance of treatment and restoring quality.
And I think the main thing with people is lifespan, because with people, we'll put you through 6 months of absolute hell with the hope that you have 30 more years, right. You know, and it's kind of the gamble that you take. Where with dogs and cats, if we put you through 6 months of hell, you might only get 6 months after that. And that totally defeats the purpose, you know? So, we're going for making them. And it's funny because people are like, well, how can chemotherapy make them feel better? You know, cause it's not something that you ever associate with human medicine, you know, you're like, but like I had a dog who had these lymphoma, these huge lymph nodes under his jaw, right by his neck. And they actually were occluding his windpipe where he couldn't breathe. And I could always hear when he walked in the door because he's like, you know, that's how he walked in. So, and we'd be like, somebody's due for his chemo. We'd do his chemo. They'd shrink. He'd be happy for a while. They'd slowly grow back. We'd do another round of chemo. They'd shrink. You know, I mean, it was just, but you can only do chemo. There's certain protocols you do, you know. So it was like once a week we were doing the Medicine Wisconsin protocol, we called it. And what that, sucked
that's
is,
still a know, thing, by the way.
Oh, yeah. It works.
The end all be all of protocols.
And because it's nice and it works, and it worked for this dog. Then after a while, the cancer became resistant to the chemo, where we would give it and they might go down a little bit, but you know, he'd still walk in going, you know, and so we'd know. But in that case, the owner was like, please, how soon can we do more chemo? Because it makes my dog feel better, which is not something you'd ever think you would say, you sure. know.
Yeah.
But it was noticeable with him. It was an easy way to notice it too.
You know, it really just comes down to the dosing. The dosing is the key. Is you know, they're just using heavily what we would call cytotoxic doses for people, and with those cytotoxic doses, basically we're looking at targeting cancer cells, but in the process you're also targeting that are the especially vulnerable healthy cells that are the cells of rapid multiplication. That is the cells of the tissues that are constantly renewing themselves. So that would be skin, that would be hair, that would be the mucous membranes of the body. So, you know, GI, right? And and of course the bone marrow. So when we see complications on the human side, and we do see this occasionally on the animal side, just not nearly as commonly. It's vomiting, right? GI sickness. It is loss of hair, of course. It is anemia because the bone marrow shut down. It's immune suppression because the bone marrow shut down. And so we're not going to toe that line quite as readily as we would with people, because with the animals, it has to be about the quality. And you know, as you stated, the Wisconsin protocol, I did that quite a bit when I first graduated. I was really lucky to get into a practice where we routinely did chemotherapy. It was part of the paradigm of the practice. And I was really glad that I joined a practice that did that, because we did so much good. We had remission rates 18 plus months, which mm-hmm. you translate that into lifespan, like into human terms, you're looking at 5 to 10 years remission, right? Mm-hmm. I would certainly take that if I knew that I wasn't even going to get that sick in the process. You know, what thoughts about that?
Yeah, well, and that's the nice thing. Most animals have no side effects at all. And if they do, it's like in human medicine, it's like you have side effects. Well, you puked all week. Well, tough it out. Here's your other shot. Same dose. And with animals, we're like, oh, that didn't work for you. Okay, we won't do that again. You know, and it's much more quality of life focused, too. I had a friend, a human friend, I guess I should clarify. He had a really, really rare sarcoma. He was like 27. I forget how old he was at the time. Oh, and the chemo that they were doing for him, they warned him, it was, he was going, they're going to obliterate his bone marrow. He was going to have one white blood cell on his blood panel. Not one where we multiply it by 1,000 and it's actually 1,000. No, one. I mean, in animals, we would never do that. Right. You know, we would never go that far and just, I mean, and, but with him, they're like, you're 27 years old. You have your whole life ahead of you. We are going to obliterate this cancer. We don't care. You know, you're going to live in a bubble for a month or whatever, and then you'll get over it and live your life. And he is. But, and dogs, and cats, we just take the approach of, you know what? We get worried if they're down to like 1500 white blood cells, you know, I mean, like just do the difference, you know, and then we're like, ooh, let's back off in the chemo. And here they are in humans going, you're going to have one and you're going to deal with it. You know, I mean, it's just a whole different mindset of how we do it. And we monitor for things too. We don't just do the chemo and say, well, you know, I hope for the best. I mean, we do want to check your white blood cell count and make sure that, you know, even if they get a little low and your pet never feels sick or never gets sick, we're still going to reduce that dose just because we don't want to risk them getting sick. I mean, that's how cautious we are with this. You know, it's not wait until they get sick to do it. So, but no, I used to do chemo at one of my former practices I worked at too. And it was really rewarding. I will say too, something to think about is it's nothing to, here we are being all encouraging and positive about it, but it's also nothing to sneeze at in terms of care, because some of these drugs, and I always had to give people this lecture and it freaked them out, some of these drugs are excreted through the urine, you know, and so if you're picking up a PPX and or something, you want to wear gloves because you could have, you know, chemo in the pee, you know, so there's little things like that that freak some people out too, just to, you know, full disclosure. but
that's a very good point.
But besides that, there's really not any, yeah, I don't know, I mean, what cancers do you treat besides lymphoma, Madison, Wisconsin protocol? That's like the big one that, you know, chemo works amazingly for. But what other ones have you had really good success with?
So my favorite of all time, period, is feline lymphoma of the gut. The reason I love it is because you don't even need the latest protocols, you don't need intravenous at all. And me personally, I think that subjecting a cat to chemotherapy, it's not the drug part that I'm concerned about. It's having the cat in the hospital all the time. What cat wants to be in the hospital on a weekly basis getting an IV? And, you know, dogs do fine with that. Most of them do anyway, you know, but cats, God, I wouldn't want that for any of my cats. But when you have the opportunity to get a diagnosis of lymphoma for cats, I'm not sure what protocol you use, but I like to combine the oral chemotherapeutic called chlorambucil with prednisone, which is just a steroid, and mm-hmm. you treat with both for 4 consecutive days, and then you dose them once every 3 weeks with both. And that's it. And you're looking at remission rates. I have one in remission right now. Just saw her yesterday. 26 months. You know, and the tough part, for me anyway, is getting the diagnosis, because you also have to sell not just, hey, future chemotherapy, but I have to do an exploratory surgery to get biopsies.
And I have to get parts of your cat out. Yes.
Right? So anyway, comments on that?
Oh, yeah. But and that's a good point, because chemotherapy can be, you know, everybody thinks chemotherapy, they think IV, they think the port that they watch their grandma have put in, you know, or something like that. But it can be pills. It can be oral. And people are like, wait, I give my cat a pill and I'm giving it chemo, you know, because it feels so simple. You know, I mean, it's like, this is too easy. But and prednisone can actually be considered a chemotherapeutic agent, too. Some lymphomas, you know, like you said, the Madison Wisconsin protocol includes prednisone. The intestinal lymphoma you were just talking about includes prednisone. So that actually works a lot, too. But people don't think of prednisone as chemo. You know, it doesn't have that stigma, but technically it is being used as chemo. So if that makes you feel less scared about the big, bad, scary word chemo, I don't know.
Yeah, I don't honestly know of any protocol that doesn't include prednisone. You know, it's kind of ubiquitous in protocols. It's just
it
about everything.
Yeah, you're right. It is. At some point, there's going to be prednisone involved.
Right? And I'm sure, like a lot of you guys listening out there, your pets have been on prednisone at some point for something, most likely, whether it's insect bite hypersensitivity or allergies, you know, excessive itchiness, asthma, you know, name your condition. It's used for so many things, but, you know, generally you're not dialing up the doses we would with included in a chemotherapeutic protocol. But that's a good point. It is part of just about every cocktail out there. But, you know, that to me, the lymphoma in of the gut of cats is probably my favorite. Do you have a favorite of yours that you've seen good
actually results? I just like any lymphoma, because they respond so well to that Madison Wisconsin protocol. I think I might have told you this. I had a dog who I had a huge lymph node. I mean, this sucker was like a softball that I took off of this dog. And I did surgery. They let me do, I think, 2 rounds of the Madison Wisconsin protocol. I think I might have told the story before. I'm having deja vu. So sorry if you have heard this story, guys. But so Madison Wisconsin protocol, normally is 6 months. But did the first 2 weeks. Totally fell off the radar. Never heard from him again. And I just figured, dog died. They, you know, I mean, I haven't called him a couple times. I was like, hey, you know, some people are like, hey, I'm out of money. Whatever. Just let me know. Never heard from him again. 2 years later, in comes the dog for her rabies shot. Looks fantastic. Like, not a single big lymph node. They're like, oh man, that chemo worked great. We're thrilled. I'm like, you only did 2. Okay, well, I'm glad you're happy. And the dog looked thrilled. So the point is, ideally you would do the whole thing and not just do the first two. This dog also had surgery too. But in this dog, I was like, you know what? Who am I to argue? Because your dog looks fantastic and what do I know? So
yeah.
But with that protocol, the first 2 doses are also the most potent and the most effective. So they did choose the right ones to, you know, the right one to do before they quit. But anyway, and actually that brings up another good point though with chemo, because I have some people that are like, oh my gosh, it's 6 months. And I told one lady, it's chemotherapy. It's not a cell phone plan. You can stop anytime. You know, like, it's not like you're committing, and it sounds expensive when you add it all up. But the nice thing is it's spread out.
Yeah.
You do this week, you do this in 2 weeks, you do this, you know, and you know what, if that shot didn't agree with your dog, we'll skip that one, or, you know, we can wing it. Or if you need to wait another week for payday, so be it. You know, I mean, it's very flexible, and it's pay as you go. And a lot of people are like, oh, that wasn't so bad financially because it was spread out over so long. I think that helps a lot.
Oh, it's a huge help. And as you're spreading it out, what I found was, and you know, I did this for 3 years in private practice. I don't do it in my clinic. I did for the first year, and the drugs were just expiring because Florida and New York are very different, at least my area of Florida. In New York, just totally different mindset. Here in Florida, it's a tough sell, you know, a tougher sell anyway.
Do you think?
What's that?
Why is that?
Just a complete different mindset. It is evolving as more transplants like me end up down here. But
because I just think it's most people in Florida are from New York, so you think it'd be the same group of people, you know?
True, yeah. I think it's also volume. I was in a 5-doctor practice. I'm just getting to my third doctor now. So, you know, I think it's also volume, different paradigm, just a whole different type of crowd, you know? Huh. But again, it is evolving, because when I first took over my practice here, it was a lot more rural where I'm at. You know my area. You've been here a few times. Next time you come here, you're going to find it's very, very different than the last time you were here, probably. It's just a lot more built up and it's more suburban, I guess. But whatever the case, I just stopped doing it. I figured, you know, I have drugs like adriamycin, you know, very mm-hmm. expensive that expires. It brings a tear to your eye. You know?
So, yeah, it does.
I just figured, you know what, for the people that do opt in, I'll just refer them out. And we have some great referral centers in Orlando. As far as when I was doing it regularly, I'm sure you found this as well. For those dogs that came in, you know, they come in wagging their tail. They look great. Owner's happy. They're dropping off. The owner's bringing cookies. You get this familiarity with the owners that, yes, you do get over many years of treating the patient. But in those couple years that you're doing chemo, God, you become they're like your best friends because you're seeing them all the time.
They're so much.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. It's really cool, right?
Yeah, well, it is. And it's because they're there because first you come for the blood draw, then you come for the chemo, then you come for the blood draw. You know, I mean, it's like each appointment isn't long. It's just the frequent number of them that gets it. But, when you brought up a good point, you know, the dog comes in there wagging their tail. And if you have the dog with that personality, then they're a great candidate for chemo. But not every dog is a candidate for chemo. If your dog is one of those freaky chihuahuas that screams every time anybody touches it at the vet clinic and just, you know, those chihuahuas that like pee and poop and scream all at the same time and you're trying to touch them and you're like, why you hate us so much?
Yeah.
Probably not a candidate for chemo, you know, just because it would not enhance his quality of life if it's that stressful.
I would take it further and say any dog you have to muzzle. Because if you have to muzzle them, that means this experience is so unpleasant for them that they're willing to lash out and bite. That is not a happy dog. That is not a dog. I think you're giving a good quality of life by forcing that on them, personally.
Yeah.
You got to muzzle them. I don't do it.
Yeah. Right. Yeah. But the dogs who come in that are like, hey, I don't care. Sure. You know, which is fortunately, a lot of our patients, then, you know, it's like, well, why would you not? They don't care. And I actually sometimes, I would actually have owners watch the chemo because when they saw how relatively anticlimactic it was, you know, they were like, oh, you're done, you know, because I mean, it's just like a Ben Christine shot.
Yeah.
You put in a catheter, you put it in, you pull out the catheter, you tape it, bye-bye. And they're like, oh, I was here for 4 minutes, you know? So, I mean, it's just, yeah. So I think the non-long, drawn-out nature, I mean, some are like adriamycin, yeah, that's a long, drawn-out deal, but there's no two ways around that. But a lot of these shots, you just stick it in and go, so, which is nice. The hair loss thing you mentioned, too, I do want to touch on that because that's another myth, I think, that I'll let you guys. I've been talking too much.
No, please. Elaborate.
The whole thing about dogs. What breeds of dogs will lose their hair and what won't?
Well, you know, so I have found this. I haven't had any dogs lose their hair, and I've treated a lot of chemos. You know, even our short haired varieties. So I've been really fortunate with those. And I'd like to hear what your experience has been. But I have found that a number of dogs have gotten a thinner hair coat, like a groomer took like a nice pair of or a set of 40 blade, you know, and trimmed them down to a certain level. And it's uniform. It's interesting. It's not hair loss. It's just so where I've experienced this was I treated a Scottish Terrier that the lady didn't have to take the dog to be groomed anymore because it had this nice, lovely short hair coat and it looked nice and neat. Lots of beagles, of course. Beagles love to get lymphoma. So we've treated a lot of beagles and you know, they're a shedding breed, but I've seen their hair coats contract. And Labradors too. I've seen that a few times. We see quite a bit of lymphoma in Labradors.
No one's ever bald. Like you see a human chemo patient and they're like bald and no dog does that.
You haven't seen that?
I mean, I see where you shave them for a catheter, the hair doesn't grow back is what I see. You know, you don't get the hair regrowth.
Post-clip alopecia. Yeah.
Yeah. And typically the dogs that are going to be most affected are the dogs who have the constantly growing hair, the hair that's always in a stage of what they call telogen, meaning it's an active hair follicle, because what does chemotherapy do? It attacks active cells. So most short-haired dogs, like your Labs, your Boxers, their hair grows and then stops. And so they don't have active hair follicles, which is why their hair is less affected. But if it's like a Maltese or a poodle or a dog, they have to have their hair cut all the time. But otherwise, they'll be dragging on the ground if you don't. Those are the dogs whose hair is always growing. And those are the ones that they say, in theory, are the ones who possibly could go bald. Yet I've done chemo on many Malteses and poodles, and none of mine ever went bald.
Have you seen the coat get like thinner, not thinner, but shorter though?
Yeah, it does. But yeah. If you believe the science of the whole telogen chemotherapy thing, they should be like smooth like a baby's butt, you know, and they're not at all. So, which thankfully they're not, because that would be sad. But
yeah, no, I've had the same observation. And, you know, on a plus note, I've had a few owners, you know, fairly content that they, you know, they're saving big time on grooming.
With it, they can afford their chemo.
Yeah, like I had a few Shih Tzus, you know, same thing, that they didn't grow those big beards, and mm-hmm. but they were still cute and they were happy, and you know, they were doing well. So while we're on the cancer subject and chemotherapy and whatnot, let's I think we should just bring up briefly one of the other treatments that does scare people, which would be radiation. Mm. That is something that we do. Would you care to comment on your experiences with radiation?
Oh, yeah. Well, I don't have any personal experiences, but a friend of mine that I went to vet school with did. So most radiation protocols that I knew were radiate every day, 5 days a week for 3 weeks. And every time you radiate, that animal is put under general anesthesia, because you can't say, hold your face right here in the beam and don't move it for 5 minutes, you know. So that's anesthesia every day in a row for 5 days a week for 3 weeks. And I was like, that's insane. Mm-hmm. Personally, I would never want to do that to my animal. But one of my friend's dogs had osteosarcoma, and it wasn't responding to anything, and he was getting really painful. And she did palliative radiation, which is my new favorite thing. So the long radiation protocol, where it's like every day, all the time for 3 weeks, that's the theory of we're going to kill this dead. The palliative radiation was 2 doses, 2 days in a row. So anesthesia, 2 days in a row, but then that's it. You're done. And she got a year out of her dog after that, which average survival for osteosarcoma after diagnosis is 6 months. And this dog had been diagnosed for months before she even did the radiation. And then she got a year after that, which was pretty amazing. So I think for those kinds of cancers, which, and for the record, osteosarcoma doesn't really respond that well to chemo. Some tumors are more chemo. That's like your lymphoma, as we talked about. But other tumors are more responsive to radiation. That's going to be more of your sarcomas, like osteosarcoma, or like your soft tissue sarcomas, like peripheral nerve sheath tumors and those. So anyway, it was really interesting, because I never even knew palliative radiation would be that effective. So I've actually recommended to other clients now. I'm like, hey, 2 doses is not scary, you know, to get so much more. And it doesn't hurt. It, you know, the dog goes there, goes to sleep, wakes up. Okay, you go back the next day, go to sleep, wakes up, and he's like, whatever. You know, I mean, it's painless. I mean, so I think it's awesome.
Yeah, I just, that's news to me. I never really, you know, I've been involved in some cases where that type of radiation was used to shrink down a tumor to then be surgically resected to mm-hmm. make, you know, to make it more resectable. But to just shrink it down and, hey, we'll give you another year of life, that's pretty cool.
Yeah.
I agree with you, though. The radiation that I've seen, and I will tell you that I've tried to talk every client out of it that has wanted to go there. And usually, for whatever reason, it's the nasal tumors.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Those nasal tumors that the cats and cocker spaniels love to get. And, you know, the damage that's done to these sinuses, it's hideous. And, you know, I'm trying to talk about it. And these are the folks that you're talking about. They're like, I don't care what it takes. Mm-hmm. I want my pet here longer. No matter what, you know, and you try to talk them out of it, but I'm not a fan. I will say that as much as I'm open to the chemotherapy, if it's going to give reasonable remission rates and it's tolerated, great, I'm all for it. But radiation, I think the palliative thing you're talking about sounds pretty good, but from what I've seen personally of those clients that have gone down that road, and just, you know, them coming back to see me weeks down the road with half their face rotting off, I'm like, you know, I was against this then, and I'm all the more against it now. So
one of my feline patients actually went through radiation for his nasal carcinoma, and he actually did really well, but all the fur grew back or changed or grew back, and on the one side of his head pure whites, and he was a gray cat. So it was pretty crazy looking. You could tell exactly where the radiation field, where you draw a line where it ended, which is pretty interesting. Yeah. But it actually put his tumor in remission. But I look at the emotional aspects of it too. If you happen to live very, very close to a radiation facility and you can go there with your pet every day, take them there, wait, and then leave, you know, that's fine. I have some people who leave their pet there for 3 weeks at a time. Ooh. And I'm like, is that love? I mean, I know you're doing what you think is best for your pet, but these are usually old animals, you know, who haven't been away from home maybe. And then 3 weeks, I mean, they're probably like, whatever. I mean, I don't know. I think that'd be scary, it'd be stressful. I would not put any old animal through it. But and then a lot of these people, they live like 2 hours away, where that's the only choice, that they want to radiate their pet. And that, those are the ones that I'm like, guys, I mean, why are you going to abandon your pet for 3 weeks and... I don't know, and have them go under. It seems like a lot to put a pet through when you can't really explain to them why you're abandoning them for 3 weeks.
I think it's completely counterintuitive to the whole point of pet ownership, period. Or let's say pet guardianship. You know, it's. I don't think that's advocating for them, but, you know,
when I was in vet school at U of I in my senior year, there was a dog with a hemangiopericytoma, or we call them peripheral nerve sheath tumors. I think it was a Rottweiler or a German Shepherd or some big, big dog. And it was on the leg. And the vet had taken the tumor off. And when it's on, like, the end of a leg like that, you really can't get good margins, you know, like, when it's on a foot, you know. So they did their best. And they got, you know, crappy margins. And they told this owner that the only way to ensure the cancer wouldn't come back was to do radiation. This woman was sobbing because they told her that they had to leave her dog for 3 weeks. They made it sound like there was no other option. And she left this dog for three. It broke my heart. And I'm like, this dog doesn't understand. And this is all for a maybe because the tumor might come back.
Yeah.
I mean, I don't know. Maybe there was some communication there that I didn't know. But I was like, why are we, remind me who this is helping, please? Because I missed the memo. Like, it was.
Yeah.
I don't know. I mean, my dog has the exact same kind of tumor. And every 3 years we remove it because it does come back. But you know what? Every 3 years I can live with whatever. I'm not going to go radiating him, you know?
Sure. So, yeah, I'm actually dealing with a soft tissue sarcoma and a Pomeranian. And it's interesting because this Pomeranian came in with a leg that looked like a tree trunk, just dragging this thing in. And it looked cystic. It looked like it was just this big bubble of fluid. And I thought, and I aspirated it and it was completely clear. And I thought, well, this is just a giant water cyst, you know, a hydrocele. Mm-hmm. That's what it looked like. And so I said, you know what I'll do is I'll open this thing up. I'll resect some of this excess skin. We'll drain this thing out. I'll close it tighter, and we should be done with it. Well, lo and behold, I get in there, and that was just the tip of the iceberg because I open this thing up. Out pours all of this water, literally looks like water. Yeah. And beneath that is a mass sitting on the connective tissue covering of the muscle called fascia. And so now I'm scraping this thing. It's really friable and just kind of falling apart in my hands. And I thought there's no way I'm getting a clean margin on this. But anyway, put it back together and cleaned out the tumor. It wasn't invading anything, but there's no way I got clean margins. And the dog did wonderful for 6 months, recovered in a snap, like better than recovering from a spay. This dog was just wonderful. Well, they came back 2 weeks ago. Almost 6 months to the day, and they're like, well, it's back, and it looked exactly the same.
No, geez.
And I said, well, you know, it's I'm not going to fix this, you know, and they said, well, can you do what you did last time? That bought us 6 months. And I thought to myself, yeah, I guess I could, but, you know, would you consider maybe if I do resect it this time, maybe we refer for radiation, this could be a scenario where, you know, maybe that's applicable here. Mm-hmm. I said, well, we can't afford that. We can afford your $700 to remove this thing and buy us another 6 months. So I did it. And, you know, the dog did great, you know. And the question is, how long can you continue to do that? And how long is it the right thing to do every 6 months?
And I don't know if it will be 6 months again this time. You got 6 months the first time. You might get 2 months this time.
Yeah.
You know.
Sure. That's another good point. And I kind of said as much. I said, look, if we get to the six-month point, let's discuss this again. Let's see what this thing looks like. Let's look at her general health and let's see how this goes. But, you know, and I, to your point, it's like if it's 1 or 2 months, then I'm going to actually try to convince you not to do this.
Yeah.
But, you know, those sarcomas, you know, chemo's not going to touch that. So, but anyway, it's funny. Do you ever go a day that you don't deal with cancer of some kind? I feel like I don't.
Well, I do just because I'm a house call vet and I only see like 5 or 6 a day,
yeah.
You know, so I don't have the quantity you do. Otherwise, I would. But I've had a run of cats with squamous cell carcinoma. That is the cancer that cats love to get in their mouths, which is the most heartbreaking kind of cancer, one of them, because from the neck down, you have a perfectly healthy cat who just can't eat because they have this tumor eating their face. And you're basically making a decision of how much to let your cat starve before you put it to sleep. I mean, it's horrible. And that's another kind of cancer that everybody's like, well, could I do chemo? I'm like, well, you could. It's not going to do anything, you know. So the point of this is not all cancers are killed by chemo. I wish they were, but there's a lot of cancers that aren't. And so fortunately, the ones that chemo doesn't touch, radiation does. But radiation is a whole different animal. And then there's some tumors that we actually need to do both. Like you said, like they radiated it first, got it down where they could cut it, you know, and then cut it so you can do that too. But it's just basically when you hear cancer, don't just think chemo immediately. There might be other, you know, other options other than chemo because, like I said, a lot of these tumors, unfortunately, chemo, it just laughs at the chemo, I've learned.
Oh, yeah. Yeah. And it's that's probably about half of what we see. You know, it's either surgical or radiation or sometimes all of the above, right? See, like you get a grade 3 mast cell tumor that's big. Well, you shrink it down with some radiation. You then resect it and then follow up with chemo. So you could you could end up with all of three. That's just wonderful. Not for me as a pet owner. But, you know, again, there is a red line that I don't cross that I feel, and I understand the emotion of it when you're in the middle of it. But, you know, I'll take you back to Tiffany. Tiffany was my college dog. So, you know, the first dog you have, that's not the family dog, it's your dog. And it's just you and or cat, you know, for me, it was a dog. It's Labrador Retriever. And I remember when I first met my wife, you know, we're engaged and we get married and she always used to joke that if it was between me and the dog, I'd be packing my bags. You know, that Tiffany was just it for me. That was my baby. Well, she came down with lymphoma at 8.5 years of age. And I was really upset, but I thought, you know what? I'm going to do the Wisconsin protocol. She's going to live another couple of years and life is going to be good. And lo and behold, Tiffany responded wonderfully. She was just one of those perfect remission cases. She's eating. Her hair coat didn't even thin out. She was swimming again and life was wonderful. And then 2 months into it, right when I'm backing off to the every other month, you know, every third week at this point.
Yeah.
She gets this just crippling ulcerative colitis and there's nothing I could do to fix it. I threw everything but the kitchen sink at this ulcerative colitis. So I couldn't proceed with chemo. I couldn't fix her colitis. And I just said, enough is enough. And you know, a month shy of her 9th birthday, I had to put her down. So I do put my money where my mouth is in terms of, you know, if I can do that with that dog, I can do that with any dog or any pet for that matter, as hard as it is. I just couldn't watch her go through anymore, you know, and I wish some folks would have the better ability to put the brakes on, you know?
Yeah. Well, I think, and it's easy to get in this mindset too, though, especially with chemo when you're like, but I've come this far.
Oh yeah.
So, you know, I have to get to XYZ, whatever landmark it is, you know, and I'm like, well, yeah, you came this far, but let's just be happy with how far you've come.
Right.
And not, you know, but you kind of get to this point like, well, we've come this far. Why not do two more? You know, mm-hmm. And it's, I've fallen into that too, where I'm like, oh, but maybe one more, that'll do it, you know, I get it.
Yeah.
Cool.
And this also kind of ties in a little bit to a couple discussions ago when we were talking about, you know, when to euthanize really, you know, when is the time and what are the things? And I would encourage anybody who's listening to this, listen to that. You know, I know it can come off like this is very morbid material, but it's so pertinent to life because we need to be able to make these decisions because in the end, it's us advocating for them. They're not making any of their own decisions. So I would just leave it with, you know, be open to the chemotherapy if your vet is, because your vet, you know, we don't like to lose. And, you know, if we're really advocating for chemo, we really believe that it could definitely help your pet. And the general consensus is that they tend to do well with it. Be open to it. Don't be terrified of it. At the same time, in the end, if it doesn't agree with the pet, let's not beat a dead horse and let's know when to say when.
Mm-hmm. I think it's a good way to put it.
So, Well, lovely to connect with you again. Can we do this again before the new year?
Yeah. Remember at the beginning of this year, you were like, we're going to do every week. And I laughed. I laughed so hard. And you were like, no, we will. And yeah. So anyway, well, after I hopefully have my building, once I buy it and renovate it and open it, then hopefully my life will calm down and I can do more things.
Well, sounds good. Well, I fully intend to talk to you again before the holidays. So I'm not going to say happy holidays. I'll say it next time.
Okay.
And that goes for you, ladies and gentlemen. I'm not going to say happy holidays to you yet either because I fully intend to talk to you again.
This will make us do it. Yes.
There you go. We have incentive. Well, good night, everybody. Thanks for your patience and hearing from us again.
Yeah, thanks.